Hi, welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We get out of the studio and onto the road to find the kind of radio you don't hear so much anymore. Stories off the beaten path and usually away from the top headlines. We'd love to hear your thoughts about the show. Our email address, indianaweekend@gmail.com. I'm John Strauss. Thanks for tuning in today. The David Owsley Museum of Art at Ball State University is in the middle of the largest expansion in its 75-year history, a doubling in size of its gallery space to make room for the first dedicated exhibit space for Asian art, for Native American art, and other pieces. We met Peter Bloom, the museum's director, to see how the work is coming along. As we walked through some of the new spaces, the carpenters and other folks were hammering away at a deadline of mid-August.
This expansion into the east and west ends of the second floor will add about 10,000 square feet, effectively doubling gallery spaces that we have available. So the core of the museum will remain pretty much the same, dedicated to European and American works of art, but we will have dedicated galleries for Asian art for the first time, as well as dedicated galleries for ethnographic art, art of the Americas, Native American, pre-Columbian South America and Mesoamerica, as well as Africa and the Pacific Islands. That will be pretty much new material for people that think they know the museum's collection.
Talk about where we are. What are we seeing here?
We're looking at a construction site.
That's what those guys are doing. Okay.
We're in what used to be the David Owsley Gallery, which was dedicated to ethnographic art, which is where it became painfully obvious that we needed to expand. This will become the new entrance to the museum from the north side at the head of the stairs from the new tower entrance on Riverside Avenue. And this will become our new gallery for ancient art, which will include Egyptian material as well as material from the Greco-Roman world, which is pretty much the launching point for everything to the east through India, and the spread of Hinduism and Buddhism, as well as art going to the western side of the museum through the sculpture court.
So the effective doubling of the exhibit space will allow us to see pieces that the museum has owned in the past but didn't have the space to exhibit?
Correct. Okay. And David Owsley himself has been an extremely active collector over the last decades, and many things that have been here have come through his generosity. A number of them are new to the collection as well.
The scale of this project, How does this compare with other similar museum expansions around the country? Does the country look at you and go, look at what they're doing in Muncie?
As university museums go, I would say this is an exceptional one. In the scope of its collection, this is more like an old Ivy League art museum, such as the ones that are at Harvard or Yale. Certainly there's nothing comparable to it in the Middle America League, or more like a Big Ten kind of a school. The art museum at Indiana University is a major museum, as is the one at the University of Wisconsin, for example. So I would say we can be enormously proud as a mid-sized Midwestern university, and I don't want to qualify what we've done here, what we have here, with that pejorative of it's okay for a city the size of Muncie. It really is extraordinary for any city to have a resource like this.
Can we walk around a little bit?
Let's head east into the new Asian gallery.
By the way, you don't just add on like you're adding on a sun deck at your house. I mean, there are a lot of considerations that you had to have.
There are indeed. This had been designed as a classroom building and is being repurposed, which gives us a floor plan that's maybe less than ideal. It doesn't circle back on itself, like the Guggenheim or the Hirshhorn, for example. But we have converted a number of small rooms into larger rooms. Right now we're standing in what used to be a staircase and two small classrooms, that we've got a fairly decent-sized exhibition space for our collection of South Asian art from India, from the Tibet and Nepal, which has never been seen like this before. I think it really looks terrific, don't you?
I do think it looks terrific. When we look at this, for example, and it says,
the head of a bodhisattva, about 300 to 399.
And this was designed as a work of art, or was it a something that in effect was in a temple?
Yes, it would have been a religious object. And it's not seen here in isolation. It's seen here in the best context that we have. For example, you'll notice that this terracotta head is smiling very definitely, but the figure next to it, which is stone, which was made about 100 years earlier, also a bodhisattva, also from Gandhara, is much more of a Greek and Roman type, very stern, of this handsome handsome man, but no smile on the face. The Greek deities didn't smile. When you see smiles, you begin to understand that you're in another part of the world. You're moving east.
Asia. Moving and east. Tell me the pronunciation again. It's
a bodhisattva.
Who's the bodhisattva?
Bodhisattva was a human who had obtained enlightenment but had elected to remain on earth to help his fellow humans attain enlightenment rather than becoming a Buddha, which would move him into a celestial sphere. Bodhisattvas are usually rather heavily ornamented, as the one back here is, with a necklace. He's got a very fancy diadem, enormous earrings. Clearly he is a royal and very special person, got up like that. Even in a rather Roman toga-looking thing, which is a leftover from Alexander the Great coming into northern India.
This is about 1,700 years old, right?
Right.
I'm scared to get too close to it. I mean, it's just...
You should be.
it's just on the wall here, which is great. I mean, as right. A person visiting here, I feel I can get close to these objects and look at them.
Right. One of my main objectives here was to make the collection accessible, not only to students, but people in this, four or five county area for which this is the art museum. And it's an exceptional resource given the extent of the collections. This is not your usual college art gallery anymore. This is a fairly well-furnished museum with material that dates from 5800 BC right through contemporary times. And with this expansion, it's making a good deal of that collection more visible in whole, as well as individual objects, which are visible in ways that they never were before. We've tried to make this installation as uncrowded as we can.
A person looking for signs of art sees it here.
Oh, right.
Can you look at one of these objects and tell me what you see?
In this process of looking at the collection anew, we've discovered a number of things that hadn't been on exhibition for many, many years, including this ivory carving, which is Christ as the Good Shepherd, which was carved by an Indo-Portuguese artist, probably in Goa, which was a Portuguese colony on the west coast of India. It had been cataloged previously as 19th century, but in fact it was made much earlier, in the late 1600s or early 1700s, and is of a type that's pretty rare now. You can find comparables in the British Museum in London and the Victoria and Albert Museum in London. Asian Art Museum in San Francisco just purchased one that's of a similar program.
That's Peter Bloom, director of the David Owsley Museum of Art at Ball State. We took a look at the progress in the museum's major expansion to double its gallery space.
Indiana Weekend, real radio from just down the road. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line to let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com. Now here's John Strauss.
This is a busy time at Ball State's David Owsley Museum of Art. Along with the usual programs, workers are doubling the size of the gallery spaces in the largest expansion in the museum's history. We stop by for a visit, and you'll hear some of the work in the background as we talk with Museum Director Peter Bloom. The expansion includes substantial new gallery space for Asian art, And just as in some of the best-known pieces of the Western tradition, some of the most striking Asian art comes from the region's religious traditions.
India has one of the richest and most tolerant cultures for many, many different religions. Buddhism was founded there before it moved on east to China and Japan. Hinduism, of course, which is still the dominant religion in India, is very well represented here. But in Goa, it still has a very large Christian population in India, and I thought it was important to include this for that reason.
What else are we seeing here?
You're looking at a case full of material which is from Tibet and Nepal. These are objects of the Buddhist religion there, and representative of sometimes small personal things, like these three little purses on the right side, or two purses actually, that a monk would have carried when he was traveling, as well as a sheathed knife. On the left side, there's a quite a wonderful mandala, which was an article used in meditation and prayer. It was seen as the universe in concentric circles that in this case have been defined by gold or gilded copper in repoussé, which is then surrounded by rows of garnets and turquoise and coral, very heavily ornamented with a wonderful fierce character on top called a Kirtimukha, who was to frighten away any evil spirits. He's underneath this very decorative pagoda. I think there's a little humor there with the ferociousness of the protective demon up at the top. You could, in fact, remove the centerpiece of it, in which prayers or supplications could have been included in sending them up to the celestial sphere, up to heaven.
This looks like a crown, or is that some sort of a headpiece?
It is, indeed. A Tibetan crown that's very heavily encrusted with turquoise and coral. It has five peaks. It's textile. There's also bits of pearl on it that, of course, would have come from a great, great distance. All of these would have been exotic substances up in the Himalaya Mountains.
This will be, when you open this, it'll be something of a premiere.
I think it'll be a big surprise to people that even think they know the museum well.
Have you had interest from other museums or groups who are going to come and see this? Because it's like a new museum opening.
They're the ones who already know the collection. It's been published. It's fairly famous. We lend things all over the United States and to exhibitions in Europe as well. And so museum professionals, I think, are cued in that this is a very special collection already. You're never a prophet in your own backyard, and this is an opportunity for us to make a little noise about what a special resource this is.
I wanted to mention,
this is a piece that came to the collection only last year from Mr. Owsley. It had belonged to Mitch Miller, the
band leader,
conductor, and went to auction when he died through his estate. And it's four amorous couples that was once part of a door jam in India. In India, the architecture is always narrative. It's telling a story. And when you see couples like this that are behaving in an affectionate way to each other, it's a sign of prosperity and goodwill. It's something that you would want around your door to bless the house.
We can assure listeners that it's all PG. There's nothing.
Very PG.
It's just they're gently affectionate. So set the scene for us again. This space looks like it's very far along.
Crossed into the northeast corner, which is a gallery devoted to Chinese art and Japanese art, which is a smaller part of our collection. But once again, here there are a number of things that people have not seen, including this ferocious chimera that greets us front and center.
Like a dragon.
Like a dragon. It's a mythological beast that was used as a guardian figure leading up to a tomb. It's a winged beast with some leonine characteristics, but they're hard to characterize altogether. Behind him, against the far wall, is the Amida Buddha, which is a Japanese religious figure of enormous. It's about 5 feet high, looking very serene, like he always lived in that spot, which was designed specifically for him, gilded on the face and the chest. We have been promoting a late Friday afternoon meditation for the past year, and I always have 4 or 5 people that show up to meditate for an hour or part of an hour at the end of the work week.
Has the Buddha always been here?
And the Buddha has not. The Buddha's been out on the second floor in a temporary location until we got this gallery built. There's a number of pieces of stone sculpture that are also new to our audience. Some of them have been here for a while and have been in storage for want of a space. But a couple of very beautiful Tang Dynasty torsos reflecting an Indian taste, which it's been revealed fairly recently that came by sea to the eastern coast of China rather than overland as the assumption had been.
Peter Bloom, director of the David Owsley Museum of Art at Ball State. They're headed toward a projected reopening of mid-August. In the meantime, it does remain open, and you can find hours and other details at their website via bsu.edu or by Googling up Ball State Art Museum.
This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.
Ball State's David Owsley Museum of Art is in the midst of a major expansion, basically doubling its size. The museum is open if you'd like to stop by before everything's complete around mid-August. In the meantime, much of the work is behind the scenes, where director Peter Bloom took us the other day to see the work in progress that is the new art museum.
These fit in an art museum because they are the art of worship or the...
These were all practical objects. They were not made as works of art. They were made to be used. And this is a concept that we've been wrestling throughout this installation of who do we call artists when in fact they were not so branded in their own native cultures, but they were making things with tremendous skill and often tremendous imagination, as we would think in the West about artists, but in fact there was no personal ownership in the sense that we have labeled artists in the 19th century living up in their garrets, laboring all alone, freezing to death in the winter, and it's a very romantic notion that we hold on to about what an artist is that was formed in the 19th century. But going back to the Kushan Empire in the year 100 or 200, I think it's a pretty big leap of faith that we're labeling these guys artists when, in fact, they were probably laborers who showed a skill for carving and could carve really wonderful things.
Well, there's a long...
They were practical things, is my point. It wasn't made as works of art to be set aside. They were objects to be used, to be venerated, to be part of a daily worship, if you will. But they weren't something that was intended for an art museum, which is a very Western concept and a very foreign one to people in South Asia, for example.
Is it true that a lot of what we consider art from the Middle Ages or centuries ago in Europe was commissioned as part of religious of churches and...
Yes, of course.
So this is kind of... Is this the analogous to that? In other words,
This would indeed be analogous to the art from the medieval period in Europe, that there was no, I think I'll make something because it's pretty... which is something that came later in the Renaissance when there was great disposable income of the Medici and the other merchant princes in Florence and Venice who could afford to develop a luxury trade in objects that didn't have a daily use but nevertheless were beautiful things or things that you would want to contemplate with a philosophical rather than a practical vent, and I'm including religion in the practical side of things.
The museum has been at Ball State for many, many years. This is a doubling of the exhibit space and really a rethinking of...
We do have something big going on. The museum has been here for 75 years. Interestingly enough, some of the first gifts that came to the university for the museum were Asian art, Chinese porcelains, and a wonderful collection of Japanese objects that came from a couple who had been missionaries in Japan. So the Asian parts of the collection, which were later kind of lost as the Western art developed here, have come full circle to occupy their own wing of the museum, if you will, greatly enhanced and greatly contextualized with material over a long period of time. So, the museum has changed. It had been pretty much a European and American collection the way it had been presented previously. There was one relatively small room which contained all of Africa, the Pacific Islands, pre-Columbian South America and Mesoamerica, Native Americans. Incredibly confusing, chock-a-block, crowded. It just didn't make any sense to jam that much of the world's cultural patrimony into a closet, basically, or a shoebox. We're delighted to be able to spread it out, and I'll say again, make it accessible just by having space surrounding it.
What made this possible?
I would have to say President Gora, realizing that we had a donor in David Owsley, a man of great taste, education, and a curiosity about the world's culture, whose collection has come in very major part here already, and who began to talk about a major bequest of the balance of his collection as well, which clearly needed a safe place to land. Mr. Owsley has also been a very generous benefactor to the Dallas Museum of Art, which is where his mother and father lived. And in Texas, they can throw up acres of museum space with the drop of a hat, or I should say pass of a hat. Nevertheless, this is Frank Ball's grandson, who looks upon this as the family's museum, and has furnished it with a truly wonderful collection that deserves to be made visible in this way.
Peter Bloom, director of Ball State's David Owsley Museum of Art, on the major expansion underway there. They expect to finish by mid-August. The museum remains open in the meantime. Details available at Ball State's website, or you can do a Google search of Ball State Art Museum. That's our show for today. I'm John Strauss. Big thanks to our producer, Marcus Jackman. Glad you could join us this time and hope you'll stay in touch. Drop me a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com if you would like more information or have an idea. Reminder, we also need your stories, ideas for places we should go, and people we should talk to. In the meantime, thanks and have a great week. Until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio, I'm John Strauss.
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss of the Ball State Journalism Department. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Marcus Jackman. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from Dillman's Furniture, Muncie, serving East Central Indiana with home furnishings from Flex Steel, Bassett, and Simmons Beautyrest. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.